Hello, and welcome to a very special series I'm moderating on diversity, equity, and inclusivity by CME Outfitters. This CMEO briefcase is entitled Racial and Ethnic Disparities in Gastroenterology Care, Real-World Strategies to Address Inequities and Treatment Outcomes. This program is supported by an educational grant by Johnson & Johnson. My name is Dr. Monica Peek, and I'm the Ellen H. Gluck Professor of Health Justice in the Department of Medicine at the University of Chicago, where I also serve as the Associate Director of the Chicago Center for Diabetes Translation Research. I'm also the Director of Research for the McLean Center for Clinical Medical Ethics. I'm really focused on health disparities and health equity, and so I'm delighted to be a part of this series and help lead this work. I'm also delighted to be joined today by my very distinguished colleague, Dr. Anita Afzali. Dr. Afzali, can you introduce yourself for the audience?
Yeah. Hello, Dr. Peek, and thank you. I'm delighted to be a part of this very important conversation and dialogue with yourself. My name is Anita Afzali. I'm a professor of medicine. I'm the executive vice chair of the Department of Internal Medicine here at the University of Cincinnati. I'm also the associate chief medical officer of all of University of Cincinnati Healthcare Systems. And I'm an adult gastroenterologist that practices and only sees patients who suffer with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis or inflammatory bowel disease. So very delighted to be a part of your program today.
Thank you so much for joining us. To start, I just want to note that this program was designed to build upon some foundational concepts that have been covered in previous DE&I activity series to learn more about the impact of systemic racism on healthcare and health disparities, as well as how racial and ethnic disparities present in gastroenterology. We encourage you to engage in these foundational programs, which are linked here on the screen. Now, before we begin, I also want to clarify that as colleagues, Anita and I decide that we would refer to each other by our first names. And so, Anita, I look forward to our candid discussion today. I'm going to start by reviewing our first learning objective for our program, which is to implement strategies to address inequities in the treatment and outcomes for patients with ulcerative colitis, which is a significant problem in our population. I'm going to open our discussion by examining disparities in the diagnosis of inflammatory bowel disease. So there is an increasing prevalence of inflammatory bowel disease amongst racial and ethnic underserved groups. In addition, Black patients are more likely to experience diagnostic delays, to be screened less frequently from a low index of suspicion for the disease, and are less likely to be under the regular care of an inflammatory bowel disease specialist, so more likely to have their care covered by a general internist. We also know that Black adult and pediatric patients have been noted to have hospital admissions that are up to 3 times the rate of white patients with inflammatory bowel disease, meaning that their disease is less well controlled, and so they're admitted to the hospital more frequently. Black patients have had worse outcomes after inflammatory bowel disease surgery compared to white patients, and a higher proportion of death or serious morbidity or complications from those surgeries within 30 days of the surgery itself. So there's a significant disparities in not only the prevalence of disease, but the care of the disease and the complications, including death, as related to inflammatory bowel disease and marginalized racial and ethnic minorities, particularly African Americans. And so, Anita, I'm going to ask you to take us from there and talk a little bit more about disparities.
Yeah, so thank you, Monica. And I think that you really are able to remind us all that these disparities exist. And we've seen this across all conditions, unfortunately, within healthcare. And here you've emphasized to us the importance of why it's so important for us to have this conversation, this dialogue. And I really appreciate this opportunity to once again reemphasize that when we have these type of disparities, specifically in inflammatory bowel disease, at the end of the day, human lives are being impacted. And as such, what we're seeing with this impact, as you've reminded us, with the prevalence of seeing, I mean, let's take a big step back and recognize that in the past, we thought patients who suffer with inflammatory bowel disease, we thought this disease was a Northern American, Caucasian, white disease. And what we have found over time is that, in fact, exactly as the prevalence you've shared, this is a diagnosis that's being made across, regardless of racial or ethnic groups. We're seeing that this is a global disease. And as such, when there's a delay in the diagnosis because of this assumption that because you may be Black that you would not have this disease or this diagnosis. There's a delay in the diagnosis. There's recognizing that with that delay comes complications of the disease. That we recognize that inflammatory bowel disease is different in each individual patient. What one person's Crohn's disease looks like is very different than how someone else's ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease or whatever may look like. And as such, when there's a delay in diagnosis already, that results in more complications. And then exactly as you highlighted to us, this also results in worsened outcomes related to those complications, increased hospitalizations, increased need for corticosteroids, delay in the appropriate medications, and even other medical issues that can come, including the risk for death. And so this is so important for us to address disparities and recognize the importance of making the appropriate diagnosis for each individual patient, regardless of race or ethnicity.
Thank you for just rewrapping that up for us. Let's jump specifically into a patient case and see how this may play out in our clinical work.
Okay, so let's start with a case that we have here. We have Harold, and Harold is a 33-year-old Black male. The vital signs are he's relatively stable in vital signs, has a little bit of a elevated blood pressure of 143 over 93. His weight is 220 with a BMI of 29. He has expressed that he has had financial difficulty. He works as a patient care tech and does heavy lifting and work throughout for his job. And what he's reported, what Harold has reported to us, is that he actually has experienced increased rectal bleeding as well as stool frequency. And he's, in fact, having to require or is requesting work accommodations given these symptoms because, quite frankly, his job is frustrated with him for the number of breaks that he's had to take in order to get to the restroom in time.
Let's take a minute to think about some of the disparities in ulcerative colitis, and then we'll come back to our case. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Thank you, Monica. I think when we talk about the disparities in ulcerative colitis, we need to take a step back and say, regardless of ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, just in general with inflammatory bowel disease, as we've highlighted initially, there's already some well-recognized and reported and studied recognition of these different inequities and disparities that we're seeing. With ulcerative colitis specifically, what we are seeing and what has been described is that sometimes, far too often, and maybe Harold is a good example, where we're dismissing the symptoms, which leads to a delay in diagnosis. And in fact, up to about 30% of patients who suffer from inflammatory bowel disease, oftentimes these symptoms and signs that they're presenting with are being not recognized as potentially associated with inflammatory bowel disease and are being excused as something else, either irritable bowel syndrome, hemorrhoidal bleeding, et cetera. And so what we also know is that when we talk about the disease distribution with inflammatory bowel disease and specifically ulcerative colitis, what we've also been seeing is that the current literature actually describes that there's lower rates of proctitis, inflammation in the rectum alone, that has been described among Black patients who suffer from ulcerative colitis. And I will say, if I could add to that, that could be potentially that perhaps we are delaying the diagnosis. The proctitis has now advanced to left-sided or even pancolitis, and that's why it's probably a delay in lead time bias, in the sense of diagnosis bias, of when we're actually seeing this diagnosis being made. And so we're saying that there's less proctitis, but maybe it's because we haven't diagnosed it when we should have earlier on. What we do know is that with inflammatory bowel disease, ulcerative colitis included, patients suffer with extraintestinal manifestations or EIMs, and ankylosing spondylitis, as an example, has been found to be in higher rates for Black patients. And then we're also seeing is that among other racial or ethnic groups, such as Hispanics and Asian patients, there is a higher rate of pancolitis. So again, the distribution of the disease has varied and has been reported as variable among different racial or ethnic groups.
That's fascinating, particularly the bit about why we might be seeing differential rates of proctitis and what that means for the presentation in clinical care.
That's
Let's
right.
go back to the case of Harold, and look at how he's presenting and how that relates to what you just told us.
Yeah, so when we go back to Harold, now he's been seen, exactly what I said, right? Unfortunately, sometimes those symptoms get classified as something other than thinking inflammatory bowel disease. So Harold presents to his primary care. His primary care has been treating him, in fact, with long-term irritable bowel syndrome, as well as that hemorrhoidal cream, topical cream for the bleeding that he had reported. He has been advised by his primary care to take some antidiarrheal medications to help him, recognizing he said he was frustrated with the amount of bathroom breaks he was taking. But as Harold reminded his primary care, that did not seem to help control his symptoms. And so he is at this point frustrated. He is now referred to a gastroenterology visit. And at that point, he has expressed that he's scared of losing his job. In addition to the workup and the clinic visit that was done, there was a test that was ordered, fecal calprotectin. This is a biomarker, an inflammatory biomarker we check that oftentimes helps us differentiate between, in fact, irritable bowel syndrome and inflammatory bowel disease, as well as a CRP was obtained for him, and his calprotectin level was elevated at 350.
Excellent. So frequently we find that beyond the diagnosis, there are also treatment disparities when it comes to conditions like ulcerative colitis. But before we get to that, this case is really fascinating for lots of reasons, and one of which is just that here's a man who had had some bleeding from his rectum and chronic diarrhea. And for me, I'm a primary care physician. And even though he's younger than the stated age for routine screening, there's no way that I would have thought that let's just, symptomatically treat this individual without doing some sort of investigative work for why he's having these symptoms in the first place for someone who's otherwise healthy.
That's right. That's right. And you're absolutely correct, right? In the sense of this is when we talk about sort of our either implicit bias or our understanding of diseases and states, or with being able to associate it. Again, you and I identify this as red flag, red flag. Rectal bleeding, this could be inflammatory bowel, this could be a malignancy, this could be cancer. We know colon cancer at higher rates among African American Blacks that we have seen definitely consistently in the literature. But unfortunately, as you've emphasized to us, that this requires appropriate discussion and conversation and knowledge. And this is certainly a knowledge gap among some providers of just sort of equating certain symptoms and demographics with disease alone and not recognizing that we should always keep these alarm signs and symptoms in account as well, regardless of racial or ethnic groups or even socioeconomic or any of the other factors that we certainly know impact some of our decision making in some practices.
Great. So we remember from the beginning of the case that he had already expressed to us that he had had some financial difficulties. And so can you talk a little bit about some of the disparities in the treatment of ulcerative colitis? And there are many reasons why that may happen, but some of those may be related to some of the social class issues that are linked for historical reasons.
Unfortunately, we know that certainly when we talk about insurance and payers and the underinsured or the uninsured, all of this has an impact to all disease states and management, including inflammatory bowel disease and ulcerative colitis specifically. As an example, there have been studies and literature that have evaluated and have in fact seen that there are higher risks, mortality risks, and other complications related to patients who are Medicaid as compared to the private or commercial payers. So certainly we've seen this unfortunate result among patients who are Medicaid patients, where there's a higher risk for mortality and hospitalization, and also have seen that with demographics alone, based off of racial or ethnic backgrounds, we've seen that there's disparities in the treatment and management, leading to these individual patients also being at a higher risk for other complications aside from mortality risk. such as the higher risk and need for hospitalizations, as well as a delay in surgery or even a higher rate of needing urgent surgery. So this is also very important to emphasize. And then lastly, and something that I'm very passionate about on finding the right treatment for the right patient at the right time, unfortunately, the right is oftentimes forgotten in some patients. And that happens to patients who are, as an example, and this has been studied, of different racial or ethnic groups where there's a delay in an initiation of the right treatment for the right individual. So delaying advanced or appropriate therapies for patients who suffer an ulcerative colitis has been found and reported and studied among patients, for example, who are Blacks or Hispanic patients, where there's a delay in appropriate treatment options.
Excellent. So let's go back to our patient, Harold. So Anita, can you tell us about our continued progress and where he is now with his case?
So Harold sees a gastroenterologist, Monica, and the gastroenterologist performs the colonoscopy and finds that on colonoscopy, well, in fact, there were findings of inflammation. There were mucosal findings of edema and erythema, as well as loss of vascular markings. And ulceration is all very consistent with ulcerative colitis, and the inflammation was limited to the left side of the colon, so ulcerative proctosigmoiditis. At that point, it was very important to be able to the gastroenterologist for them to have a conversation with Harold, recognizing that that through shared decision making, we want to determine the right treatment, right? And so we made the diagnosis, we did the testing, and so now being able to discuss as far as treatment options, going through those guidelines as far as if they're biologic naive or have been previously exposed. As we know, Harold just got this diagnosis. So this is a new diagnosis for him. And so after discussion of what is ulcerative colitis, then the conversation happens with what kind of treatment can we do? Well, at this point, Harold says, I've reviewed the different medications with him, and he says, I'm actually really scared of needles. My job requests a lot out of me, and I don't want to be able to always worry about frequent administration of my medications. I want to be started on a treatment that's convenient with myself and my job and what I'm doing. And I also live in an area that's unfortunately a food desert. And what we mean by that is, as we've discussed management of his disease, we also reviewed as far as healthy eating and trying to avoid a high inflammatory types of food. In fact, we recommend a Mediterranean diet. And Harold says that's kind of tough for where I live to be able to have access to that type of diet and those resources. So with Harold, the conversation as far as different treatment options were discussed. And Monica, remember, he said he is needle phobic. He wants to be on a treatment where he doesn't have to think about it regularly. And so we discussed different therapies given the severity of his disease, and his gastroenterologist and him had a conversation, and ultimately finding an option such as infliximab, which is an infusion-based therapy, which allows him to ultimately, after the induction doses, not have to think about, which was Harold's concern, as far as his medications for every 2 months, right? So it's every 8 week dosing. And so as such, it's an infusion. He's able to get his treatment through an infusion and then be able to resume his regular work and not worry about it. And certainly Harold, as we mentioned, being needle phobic, wanted to avoid any options that are subcutaneous. So that was the conversation we had, again, recognizing with Harold that there's the significance of medical treatments, but then also the lifestyle management and changes that will also be necessary. And those discussions were happening with him with a dietitian in the clinic to be able to review some foods and that could be avoided that may trigger some of his symptoms. Even though he does live in a food desert, we were able to better understand what he does or does not have access to, and also to just have a conversation in regards to what foods or he should or shouldn't maybe limit or avoid if possible.
Excellent. So thank you so much for that, Anita. I really appreciate all of the ways in which you talked about disparities on the care continuum and how we can think about intervening at all of those through a patient-centered approach that thinks about the social drivers of health, how we can address those, and really have a treatment plan that meets patients' needs and still has the same high quality of care that everyone wants and deserves. We're now going to move to our second learning objective, which is to implement strategies that addresses inequities in the treatment and outcomes for patients with Crohn's disease, which is the sister disease of ulcerative colitis. And Anita, we just went through a wonderful case that highlighted disparities specifically again in ulcerative colitis. And so we want to now look at a case of April, who has Crohn's disease, and I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, so let's walk through another case. And as you said, Monica, we're going to go through a Crohn's patient who is named April. April is a 28-year-old Black Indigenous female patient who has a history already of ileal colonic Crohn's disease and is currently on adalimumab. Her vital signs are within normal range. She does have a lower BMI of 17.8. April works as a waitress and she's an aspiring actress. She has multiple medical comorbid conditions. She vapes nicotine. She has iron deficiency anemia. She has some anxiety, as well as what she's been labeled as having chronic pain. And this pain is primarily in her, not just the abdomen, but the hips and the back. And April, when she comes in for her visit, she reports that she's having nocturnal symptoms and that she also has endorsed increased fatigue, has a decreased appetite, and also has had unintentional weight loss. Well, with her at the time of her visit, she was encouraged to basically do what she's currently doing, if you will. She was instructed and advised that her labs were within normal, and by labs, we meant calprotectin. And so that basically, if she continues to worsen, to give the office a call, but otherwise maintain as is, because her last colonoscopy wasn't that bad. Her labs were normal. So April, come call us if things get worse, is the message she heard.
All right. So Anita, you had mentioned some information that was highlighting disparities in the recognition of symptoms for Crohn's disease. And so I think it would be helpful for the audience to take a closer look at some of the disparities. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So very similar to ulcerative colitis, where we're recognizing that delay in diagnosis results in worsened disease, disease progression and outcomes, right? And so as such, with whether it's ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, the delay in diagnosis results in the worsened phenotype. And what I mean by that is that what we have found in the studies and literature are, as an example, for Black patients are found to have or be at a higher risk to have penetrating disease phenotype. Now, Monica, we know that most patients, when they're first diagnosed, it actually is an inflammatory phenotype. And over time, it progresses to penetrating and stricturing disease. So this is an example, a cue for us to say that, again, very similar to the ulcerative colitis, proctitis versus pancolitis. This, once again, is this really Black patients have a higher or risk for a different type of phenotype, or is it because of that delay in phenotype,
yes,
or delay in disease that it results in that advanced phenotype? We also know that there have been disparities in underdiagnosis of other extraintestinal manifestations of disease or other immune-mediated conditions that have been reported and seen and described among Black patients, as an example, where they are at a higher risk of arthralgias and uveitis. And for example, Hispanic patients are at a higher risk of erythema nodosum. Now, again, when we look at EIMs, these extraintestinal manifestations, not all of them are separate disease states. And what I mean by that, Monica, is that sometimes if you have active inflammation, that parallels other conditions, right? So active bowel disease can also place our patients at a higher risk for arthropathy. Active inflammation places you at a higher risk for erythema nodosum. It parallels bowel disease activity. So a delay in either diagnosis or a delay in appropriate treatment results in worsened outcomes as well. Patients have been reported to be at a higher risk for hospitalizations. In fact, four times higher risk of hospitalization if you're of a lower socioeconomic background as compared to if you're not. So these are some examples that once again highlights the importance of exactly why you and I are having this dialogue.
Yes, that is so rich and so important. And I really appreciate you interrogating this distinction between, is it really that this population has a a different phenotype or a higher prevalence of these, extra manifestations, or is it really just that they're getting diagnosed later when complications are occurring
Right.
and the disease is less well controlled, so inflammation is already occurring in other organs. And so, had they been treated earlier, diagnosed earlier, they would have these different phenotypes and different sort of disease courses. So thank you for sort of bringing that up. Let's go back to our case of April and see how she's doing.
Yeah, so April returns, and remember, she was told if it gets worse, come see us. Well, she's back, and it's getting worse. She's having ongoing fatigue. Her anxiety is still present, and she continues to report pain and those weight-related symptoms, continuing to lose weight as well. So an MRI was performed. Recall, Monica, April has a diagnosis of ileocolonic Crohn's disease, right? And she was told last that her colonoscopy was normal and her labs weren't that abnormal. So as such, she was left to come when needed. But when an MRI was finally obtained, you can see that there was evidence of a stricture. There was evidence of fibrostenosis. This once again is very consistent with the symptoms that she was having. So April was referred to a general surgeon, recognizing that this was a long stricture. And in fact, this entire time, unfortunately, April's been suffering with at least partial bowel obstructive symptoms that resulted in the pain, which she was told she has chronic pain, recall, that resulted in her weight loss. And that probably was associated with, oh, she's an actress, she's or an aspiring actress, she has anxiety, some of these other stuff. So once again, it's some of these implicit biases that are happening that needs to be called out on, quite frankly.
Absolutely. It seems like for gastroenterology, where the symptoms are frequently kind of vague or hard to pin down, that there's just so much more space and room for implicit bias on the part of providers to intervene and cause diagnostic delays. And here we see the implications and how they can manifest in significant morbidity and mortality for our patients. It's really eye-opening and so important that we prevent these kinds of diagnostic delays and really consider what people are telling us in the office, and how that may actually be manifestations of things that are happening in their body. They're not just psychosomatic. And I think this case really highlights that fact. So let's use her case to talk about some treatment disparities. And so I'll hand it back over to you.
Yeah, so very similar to ulcerative colitis, we are in fact and indeed seeing treatment disparities for patients who suffer with Crohn's disease and come from different racial or ethnic backgrounds. As an example, Black and Hispanic patients are three times the rate of that being on corticosteroids, prednisone, or other classes of steroid use compared to white patients. And this isn't a, well, their disease is potentially more refractory to therapy. It's the way I interpret that, Monica, is it's a suggestion that potentially they are not being offered the appropriate early treatment and they are being masked or given that band-aid treatment, which is corticosteroids. What
Yes.
we also know is that this is consistent with, unfortunately, other literature that has found and really proven this point, which is that unlike the steroid use being so high, the use or the prescription for immunomodulators or biologics are lower among Blacks and Hispanic patients. Again, if both were low or if both were high, that's one thing. But when you see that kind of disparity, then indeed it proves to demonstrate that, in fact, we are not initiating appropriate therapy for the right patient at the right time. Also, what we know is that as far as the different studies have demonstrated, we know Crohn's disease, unfortunately, is a disease that may place patients at risk for need of other interventions, including surgical interventions. And what we know is that when there's a delay in treatment and a delay in management of the inflammatory phenotype, and when it progresses to penetrating or stricturing phenotype, patients are at a higher risk for need of surgery. And as such, that has also been described and reported among Black and Hispanic patients as well.
Excellent. We're hearing just a consistent theme throughout this session of Patients telling us one thing, physicians not listening, complications happening. I think that's the take-home message.
That is the take-home message.
You're just a wonderful practitioner. Thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. Let's go back to April's case and check in and see how she's doing.
So with April and with the findings that was on that MRI that showed the stricture and the gastroenterology discussion as well, she also needs to and has had the conversation in regards to the medication, recognizing that surgery may be needed to deal with the immediate symptoms, but longer term management is important. Now, remember, April has had a diagnosis of Crohn's before. In fact, she was treated even previously with mesalamine. Monica, we know mesalamine doesn't work in Crohn's disease, yet we still give it. And so this is unfortunate again. She's required steroids in the past. She is currently on adalimumab as a reminder. And so certainly recognizing that this is not improving, not just her symptoms, but it has not delayed the progression of her disease. So adalimumab is a TNF inhibitor, so I wouldn't want to put her on another TNF agent. So as such, we would consider treatments such as ustekinumab as an example. It's a different mechanism of action. It has a great safety profile as far as infection risk, malignancy risk. Those are not a concern. It's convenient for her because it's the treatment that she doesn't have to think about after the initial induction dosing for every 2 months and get her injection, a sub-Q, and then she again can continue with her work and her efforts. But all of this was discussed with April once again through shared decision making, recognizing what her preference is, discussing the pros and cons of not just medical management, but also surgical management, and also getting involved other multidisciplinary collaborators, such as a dietitian, a psychologist, to be able to help with her baseline anxiety as well. This is a chronic diseases, and the impact of mental health is huge. And this is something we all need to pay special attention to. So these services were offered to April as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Just wonderful cases that we've had today. Before we finish today's discussion, I want to discuss the importance of team-based care. It's really important in my primary care practice. And given all of the complexities that people have who have inflammatory bowel disease, I imagine it would be really important for your practice as well. Can you share your thoughts on how you might be using team-based care?
Yeah, so team-based care in all disease states is important. I think to call it team-based care or patient-centric care, right? Being able to always have the patient in the middle, in the center, and identifying what additional collaborators, as we did for April, can we identify and help our patients with respectively. For some, it might be the gastroenterologist and the surgeon and a dietitian. For someone else, it may be a financial counselor as well as a social worker to help them navigate some of this. For someone else, it may be a social worker or a educator or a patient navigator who can be able to provide the appropriate resources, as an example, in different languages, or be able to have additional visits through a additional nurse or a advanced provider or any other additional resources within the clinic that can be able to help, such as a pharmacist, to review in a slower pace, if you will, with some of these discussions and conversations. For others, it might be being able to bring in our rheumatologist to make the diagnosis and help with the management of the extraintestinal manifestation. All of this, Monica, is once again, if we keep our patients at the center and recognize what are their concerns. And at the end of the day, it's shared concerns regardless of what race or ethnicity one is from, being able to help them identify what are the resources that they need, who are the collaborators and key stakeholders we could bring into their care circle or teams of multidisciplinary providers and resources that we can provide. So ultimately, with the shared goal of a better quality of life, and that's what every individual deserves, quite frankly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much. What an excellent discussion. Thank you. I'm going to try and summarize our discussion with our SMART goals. And so those are goals that are specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. So that's what I hope that our listeners will take away from our presentation and apply to your own practice. So the first is to identify disparities in the diagnosis and treatment of ulcerative colitis. That was our case with Harold. The second of which is to identify disparities in the diagnosis and treatment of Crohn's disease. That was our case with April. The third of which is to integrate holistic treatment strategies into the care of patients with inflammatory bowel disease to improve equity in both treatment and outcomes. Last is to consider team-based strategies in the care of patients with inflammatory bowel disease, to address inequities in treatment and outcomes. So this CMEO briefcase is one of a four-part CME CE initiative, and we hope that you'll take advantage of and participate in all of the activities in the series because they're all wonderful. These activities cover strategies to address racial and ethnic disparities across therapeutic areas, and I really encourage you to join us for the entire initiative. By participating in these activities, you'll demonstrate your own personal commitment to improving health equity for all of your patients. This CMEO, a D&I hub, also has a number of resources available to you to help further your own personal education on diversity, equity, and inclusivity. So, Anita, I really just want to thank you once again for joining us for a robust conversation. You are such an excellent provider, so well-knowledged. And really just a wonderful resource. I learned a lot from our session today, and I hope that everyone who's been listening today has as well.
Monica, thank you so much for having me. And it's really important to have these type of dialogues to be able to, again, have a shared learning approach for us as well. We talked about shared decision-making with our patients, but this is the community needs to hear us all discuss and have these tough conversations sometimes. And so I'm really thrilled and delighted to have been a part of your program.
Thank you again. To receive credit for this activity, please complete the post-test and evaluation. We really appreciate your feedback, and it's how we learn how to make our programs better. So please tell us what you liked, how we can improve, what additional topics you would like for us to address. And again, I just really want to sincerely thank you, our audience, for your commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusivity education, because together, all of us together, we can strive to provide the best and most equitable care to all of our patients, particularly those who are most marginalized and underserved. Thank you so much for joining us today.